Alan Taylor is a two-time winner of the Pulitzer Prize in History. His latest book is American Republics, A Continental History of the United States, 1783 to 1850. It is a revealing look at our nation's formative years, sweeping in scope and scale, and yet vivid in particulars. Taylor's latest upends the traditional narrative of a young nation confident in its continent-spanning destiny. Instead, American Republics offers a powerful portrait of a fragile and embattled Union in its internal divisions, only exacerbated by expansion across a contested continent. Again, the name of the book is American Republics. It's a great pleasure to welcome Alan Taylor to the roundtable this morning. Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What brought you to this particular subject, this particular time frame?
Well, I've been a historian of this time period for quite a long time, and then I'd written a previous book called American Revolutions, and I became interested in trying to tell the sequel, to tell the story of the United States from the Revolution deep into the 19th century.
What is it about this particular time and saying this is something that I want to further investigate?
Well, this is the foundational period for the United States. This is when they're implementing their new federal constitution. They're establishing the institutions of governance that are still with us. They're establishing the principles of government. And they are organizing their society and beginning a pretty rapid program of Western expansion. So all of these things have created legacies that shape who we are today and shape both the problems and the potential solutions that we have today. So I wanted to understand those origins a lot better.
What is fascinating is the portrait that you give us shows that America at that time was very fragile. It was very fragile, and you would expect it to be, although it is not often now perceived that it was as fragile.
Yes, the United States begins as a weak, decentralized country, and it's dominated, potentially dominated, by the superpowers of the time, which would be France and Britain, and even Spain was more powerful than the United States. And the United States had all sorts of internal divisions, the radical differences between southern and northern states and between eastern towns and western settlements. The geography discouraged unity. There were no modern roads, certainly no railroads, no airplanes. And so people were worried that as the country grew larger, that it would just blow apart. And the Constitution was an effort to paper over many of these differences. And in many ways, it's a brilliant document. But it's also one that kicks a fair number of these problems down the road. And those problems will come home very much to roost with the Civil War of the 1860s.
Hmm. In that kicking it down the road, how aware were they of the time that that is indeed what they were doing?
Well, they knew that things like the differences between North and South over the future of slavery in the country, they were things they could not resolve and still have a union of the states. So they decided that they would provide certain guarantees to the South that the federal government would not intervene in slavery in those states. So they knew they were doing that. But there was also a lot of wishful thinking. There was a wishful thinking that slavery was just going to erode away, that it would become uneconomic, and that they would figure out some way to ship former slaves back to Africa. It wasn't at all realistic, but it shows how keen they were to establish some sort of union of their states because they feared the alternative was war between the states.
Speaking of states, one of the things that you point out in the book is that many people of living in America at that time felt allegiance to the state they were in, to the state that they lived in. But they did not have much of a national identity. They did not feel that allegiance to the United States.
Yes, we project backwards this assumption that people felt like they were Americans. So to be an American in the colonial era just meant that you lived in America. It wasn't a national identity. There were 13 separate colonies, and indeed they're a subset of the 27 different British colonies, only about half of which revolted against the British Empire. So there was no opportunity prior to the Revolution for them to develop some sort of collective identity as Americans. Now, they start down that path during the Revolution. But as soon as the revolution has been won as a war, they start to go their separate directions. And the original Constitution of the United States, something called the Articles of Confederation, is extremely weak. And the different states just stopped contributing money to it. They started squabbling, having disputes over boundaries. So there was a real fear when you got into the middle of the 1780s. This is after the war, but before the federal constitution. In that period of crisis, there's real fear that the whole thing's going to blow up. And that's what leads to the Constitutional Convention at Philadelphia in 1787.
When you look at 1787, what happens there, and is it a seismic change?
It's a pretty big change, but in a way, it's a big potential change. And that the delegates were sent to Philadelphia to just try to come up with some amendments to the Articles of Confederation. Well, it had been impossible to amend the Articles of Confederation because it required unanimity. All 13 states had to approve. So the delegates got in there and they said, well, we're not going to just do that. We have to have a whole new constitution. So they're doing something pretty risky. They're violating their instructions. They held their meetings in secret. And they found out that there were big differences among them, that a majority of them did want to come up with a new constitution, but they couldn't agree on just what it should look like. Should it look a little stronger than the Articles of Confederation, or should it be something entirely new? And they ended up compromising, and every one of their compromises was very hard fought and ended up in a very close vote. So that convention nearly blew up at several points over the summer of 1787. And in the end, almost everybody felt like, well, this is the best we can do, but it's not great.
So much of your story has to do with going west and what that meant, and why there, in one hand, there was this great fear of outsiders, whether it be from Britain or Spain or France. And yet there was also a need to move on and to expand what they had, and those two often came at odds with one another.
Well, the United States had the fastest population growth of any other country during the early 19th century. The population is doubling every 22 years, partially due to immigration, but mostly due to just natural increase. It's a relatively healthy country, and people marry young, and there's virtually no birth control. And they have large families, and children tended mostly to live and become adults. And so you need more land if you're going to sustain the same standard of living. And it's an agricultural country. There's almost no industry in these early years. And so people need farms. Well, how are you going to get farms? Well, you're going to take them away from native peoples and take away the lands of native peoples and create farms in these native homes. Well, natives resist this. They don't want to give up their homelands. And then there's also another problem within the United States, which is that in the southern states, 40% of the population is held in slavery in 1776. And there's fear that they'll rise up in rebellion. And then there are neighbors next door. There's the British Empire still to the north in Canada. There's the Spanish Empire to the south in Florida and in Louisiana at that time. And the native peoples would form alliances with the Spanish and the British in order to get firearms and ammunition to resist American expansion. So Americans feel threatened by this whole combination of powerful neighbors, imperial neighbors, who can exploit the fault lines within the United States, principally the potential for slave revolts, and also the reality of Indian resistance to American expansion. So the solution seems to be expand and push everybody away from the United States. But when you do that, then there's a fear in the South that maybe the North's going to get too much territory, and the North is fearful that the South's going to get too much territory. And if one side figures out that this expansion game is working against their relative power in the Union, the whole thing can blow up.
And you talk about the native peoples of their the times of real unified opposition to that American expansion.
Yes, there's a period in the 1780s and early 1790s where a group of Indian nations living in the Midwest unite to resist American expansion. And that suddenly makes American expansion much more difficult, because Americans were used to playing divide and conquer, that they would get some Indians to fight against other Indians in order to take lands from all the Indians. And so there's a time in which this Indian Confederacy is very successful at defeating the forces of the United States in the 1780s and early 1790s.
When you look at just the title of the book, American Republics, the fact that there are many, what does that say and bring us to 1850, of that being sort of a logical place for you to conclude your narrative?
Okay. Well, we tend to talk about the American Republic singular, but to be technically accurate, it's a confederation of Republican states. So the republics are the states. And then they form a union. And what exactly that union is, how strong it is, whether it's a true nation or if it's still some kind of confederation, remains in debate until we have the Civil War of the 1860s. Also, there are other republics in North America. There's a republic that's formed in Haiti by enslaved people who rise up in rebellion against their French colonial masters. And there's a republic in Mexico created by a movement for independence from the Spanish Empire that culminates in independence in 1821. And then there's the potential that there will be breakaway republics from the United States, that people moving to Vermont founded a separate republic for a while. For a while, Tennessee went its own way as the Republic of Franklin. And there's fear, and then Texas becomes an independent republic for a while. California is an independent republic for a few weeks. And then Mormon immigrants are creating their own country called Deseret, which will eventually be absorbed into the U.S. So there's the potential in North America for not only the several republics there are, but there'll be many more republics. And this is then a potential problem for the United States that would like to include within its confederation all of the republics of North America.
What do you hope the takeaway is, and ultimately what we can get from reading the story?
Well, I think we have a tendency to think that the federal Constitution of 1787 put the U.S. on autopilot for greatness. And that leaves out a whole lot of troubled history between 1787 and certainly 1865. If we assume that the federal constitution solved all the problems of this new country, then the Civil War of the 1860s, we can't explain it. But if we see that the federal constitution solved many important problems, but not all of them, and that the United States continues to be a union in which the member states have powerful disagreements over what that union should be, if we understand that, then we can make better sense of all the difficulties that the United States experienced during the early 19th century.
Alan Taylor has twice won the Pulitzer Prize in History. His latest work is American Republics, A Continental History of the United States, 1783 to 1850. It is published by Norton. Alan Taylor, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, American Republics, A Continental History of the United States, 1783 to 1850. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.